So, Linda Lancashire, it's a name you'll know from BBC Radio Nottingham over many years and a voice you'll recognise when she says hello.
Hello, hello, Alan.
Good to see you. And
thank you.
Today's a different day for you, really, on BBC Radio Nottingham. Normally, you would be there with some thoughts on what's going to happen to everybody. But today, we're going to look backwards and tell your story.
Alan, this is so different for me, because normally I'm reading the stars out and... Yeah. This is hoofing oneself out of one's comfort zone.
Isn't
well
it?
And truly.
Yes, because I know you are a modest lady in a sense. It's
very
not about
private
you.
Person.
Yeah, that's
yes.
Word. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Now, I should also say at this stage, and we'll mention it again, that you're going to be popping up on Saturday mornings with Mark in future from here on in.
I know. Remarkable. I'm so honoured and privileged to have been invited to go on Saturday morning breakfast show doing the stars. I'm so... fortunate, and thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, it'll be sad to see you move away from the afternoons, but a chance to maybe reach a new set of ears.
Yes.
To benefit from your insight and understanding of the astrological world.
Well, life has to move forward, you see, Alan. There are lots of ways of moving forward, but only one of standing still for all of us. Mm. And this has been an invitation, an opportunity, and I said... yes, I'd like to do that.
Good luck.
So we're going to do it.
But the price you have to pay to leave this show is to do a bit of a, well, life story, really. Because I started to get the sense that there was much more to you than meets the eye, really, in terms of things that have happened. So if you don't mind me leaping in and beginning at the beginning, well, even before the beginning for you, your parents and how they got together and where they got together. This is fascinating.
Well, it goes back a long time and to the end of the Second World War. And they met in England. My father was in the Polish army. And my mother came over, because my grandfather was in the Polish army as well. They travelled all around the world, all to different countries where the war was. And they met in Mansfield at a dance. Good-looking people, fell madly in love. And then I came along. And then two others came along, two brothers. And we lived in Mansfield.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my parents are very sadly not with us now. But my father was a coal miner.
Which pit did he work at then?
Rufford Colliery. Wow. Rufford, because they didn't speak very good English. I didn't speak English until I was 5 years old. I was brought up to speak Polish. And so when I went to school, it was very difficult because I didn't know how to speak English. And English then became my bestest subject in the whole world. I remember falling madly in love with reading. All my life I've been passionate about reading, and so my whole family are. We're all big book readers. And so everything stems from there,
right.
You know.
Which school did you go to?
I went to King Edward's Junior School and Infant School. Then I went to High Oakham because I failed my 11 plus, which was awful at the time. But it wasn't meant to be, you see, because otherwise I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. But it isn't until you look back on your life that you realise everything had to happen to bring you to the point where you are now. So I left school at 15 with nothing.
Can I ask a personal question? Were you a popular child at school?
No. No, I think I was a loner. I came from a very poor family. In those days, if your parents were not doctors, solicitors, dentists, you sat at the back of the class. You're just a miner's daughter. That was it. Back in the 1950s.
Really?
Yeah, that's how it was. And I had to work extra hard to try and keep up with everything. I left at 15. It was my choice. I was bullied at school. It was dreadful. And I went to work in different places. I always knew I was different. And I remember thinking, I'm going to do readings for people, because I could read hands.
Well, of course.
And I knew I could do this.
So that's a key thing. When did you start to think, what was it that told you had maybe a bit of a gift for this? Did you used to read your own horoscopes when you were in your early teenage years?
No, nothing like that. We're going back to the 1950s.
Yeah.
I was born into a Polish Catholic community. They didn't even know about such things. And it wasn't until years later that one of my aunts told me about great-aunt Lydia that lived in Poland. And she was the midwife, and she was the herbalist, and she was single, and she was tall, and she wore black, and she delivered babies, and she had a pig and a goat and a cow. That's how they lived in the villages. And she used to read cards and tea leaves. And, of course, my mother could read the cards. I mean, she was very good, but she never used it. And that she regretted it later on. But she was very, very good. But she was wonderful at interpreting dreams, my mother.
Oh.
And I've got that from her. And the gift has passed down to Katie, my daughter, because she also works in the same line of work as I do. It's a gift. You can't teach it, you can't learn it, you can't buy it. You've either got it or you haven't. And I remember one day thinking, I'm not going to work for other people.
Right. What sort of jobs did you do when you left school? Were you sort of...
I went to work in a shoe shop. I went to it
as an assistant.
Shop assistant, yeah. Bridal shop, couldn't settle.
Yeah, but you like working with people by the sounds.
Always,
of it. Yeah.
Always, but couldn't settle. Something was missing, all the time, missing. So I saw an advertisement in the Chronicle Advertiser, the Chad. Learn to do Willie Schreidiger touch typing course. And it was above a pub, a room above a pub. So I learnt this touch typing and I got my certificate. And I thought, this is going to be me one day. I need this typing. I just knew. And, of course, I'm writing the stars. I'm typing every day. And I can type like the wind. It's been the best thing I ever did. And I remember thinking, I am never going to work for anybody else as long as I live again. I am never doing this. I didn't like it. Couldn't be told what to do. The rebelliousness was always there. Someone says, you can't do that. I'd say, watch me. And I think a word to describe me would be determined. And I'm a very focused person, very determined. If I start something, I'll finish it.
So what age were you then when reading the cards and the stars became a source of income? Actually, you became sort of professional.
I would say I was probably 16, 17 years
so quite
old.
Young.
Yeah. Mm. I was still working in the jobs I was doing, but I was doing this as well.
Mm.
And it was then, as things developed, that I decided to jump ship. I thought, I can do this. It's about believing in yourself.
And how do you, in those early days, go about getting clients, people who are prepared to pay for you? Did you advertise? Did you put cards up in windows or anything?
No, word of mouth.
Really?
Never advertised in my life.
Right.
Never needed to. People talk. People need help. People find out who you are. I've never had to go looking for anything.
So did you have a room where people could come and consult with you? What did you do?
I'd go to them.
Right.
I would go to their house. I'd be mobile on the bus. So that then the best thing I could do after that was learn to drive. And so I learned to drive. It took me 3 tests, but I managed to do it in the end. Because I wasn't that confident. It was nerve-wracking. But I'm a survivor, and I learnt from a very young age the importance of being independent, the importance of being a survivor, and to have a life with a purpose.
Well, that takes us in a way back to your parents, I think, because
they were survivors. Yes.
Yeah, your dad was fighting, and your mum was younger, and had she fled war-torn Poland?
War-torn Poland. They'd gone through Afghanistan, Uzbekistan. They'd gone through Turkey. They had to follow my grandfather around.
Yeah.
My father was a very, very clever bloke. He spoke many languages: French, Italian, German, Polish. He was self-taught. And they bought me books and encyclopedias. You must learn, educate yourself, they said. You have to learn. To get in this world, you have to work and learn. And so that's what I did. And it was after school that I started to educate myself. I went on courses. I learnt shorthand. I was always doing a course, self-improvement all the time. And I thought, right, I can do better next time. I can do a bit better. And so I still do that now, a little bit better, a little bit more.
Hmm.
You can do it.
And so we've learnt about your early days in Mansfield and school days, and then deciding you were not going to work for anybody else, you worked for yourself, and
you were
exploiting the gift, which just sort of became, it made itself known to you that you had this gift, did it?
It was always there.
Hmm.
I just used it.
Hmm. And that will open you up to a certain amount of ridicule and disbelief and scepticism and people making cheap jokes like, you know, who's going to win, what are the pools numbers I should have this Saturday? How do you deal with all of that?
I smile and nod. I smile and nod. It's an easy, like an easy life. You know, how people treat you has got nothing to do with you. It speaks volumes about them. And, you know, I just smile. Yes. It water for duck's back. Mm. It doesn't actually have an effect on me.
And so, explain what you think you can do with astrology. Because when you do the weekly, as they will be, forecasts on
yes.
Radio Nottingham, that's speaking to a large number of people. You think of all
yes.
of the Aquarians who
yeah.
are listening. So what you say has got to be quite broad. It can't be absolutely accurate for everybody. But
so what I use is not the astrology so much when I do my work. It's the tarot cards, the crystal, the palmistry. It's working on a one-to-one basis with that person. And never allow anybody else to sit in the room. It's private. It would only get muddled up with their vibrations. And, you know, people tell me everything, absolutely everything. There are no secrets. So they don't want someone else in the room, their friend, to listen, because people have secrets. And I tend to unearth and dig them out. And being a Scorpio, I'm very penetrative, and I will dig them out, and then I can help them. And I've made all my friends through this work. Mm. Sometimes we meet people that we click with, and you know you're going to be friends. So, and I've met some fantastic people over the years, really good, but I never discuss clients. I have no photographs anywhere of the stars, the film stars that come to me, the celebrities, because nothing worse than someone saying, oh, I didn't know she came to you or he did. So no one knows anything. It's private. I never discuss clients' stories. So I don't allow recordings either, because it isn't a parlour game. It is a serious one-to-one meeting. And has to be valued that way, you know?
One very quick question, and you know, there's a million and one things we could ask
yes.
you about. But where, if at all, does God fit into this? Because some people think that astrologers and people who read tarot cards and crystal light are stepping away from
a
God-like or a Christian belief.
No. I'm going to tell you something now. This is very, very private, personal. I'm going to tell you. I know that there is a power. Nothing to do with astrology. I've had evidence and proof. Through my cancer illness especially, the help I've had, there's something. I don't know what name you can put on it, but I do believe that there is something watching over us, something good. So that's a very private thing with God, religion, because there's room for everybody. All different beliefs, all the roads lead to Rome anyway. There's more than one fruit in fruit bowl, but it all goes to one place. So I'm always interested to meet different people from different religious backgrounds, because I can learn something from them. But I've only ever been treated with great respect and kindness from the different people that I've met, because I respect what people feel, and everyone's entitled to their own belief, even if they don't have one.
You've been very good to do this, because it's difficult to talk about yourself when you're a person that's more interested
difficult.
In others.
But I can talk about other people, ask them how they are, but I find it very weird. But I'm doing okay.
You're doing fine.
Oh,
you're doing
good.
Fine. But as I say, this, in many senses, is the hardest thing to talk about, maybe, because you were very ill. How did you find that out? What happened? Because you'll know that many people
yes.
either fear what you've had
yes.
or are going through it, or
yes.
they have relatives or close friends
oh
that are going
God.
Through it. So
yes.
what you say is really, really important here. How
okay.
did you know, first of all?
Well, I remember feeling in the beginning exhausted. I went out for perhaps a bite to eat with a friend. I was home for 7:30. I had to go to bed. I was tired, worn out. And I was coughing. I kept having this dry cough, this cough. And one or two people said, that cough's a bit worrying. I thought, oh, I'll be okay. Oh, I'll be all right. Never went to the doctors. Oh, I'll be fine. Big mistake not to go. Massive mistake not to go. And I buried it, put my head in the sand, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. And I noticed a slight indentation on my right side, my right boob here. Just noticed it. So I went to see the GP. I said, I've got this cough. And she says, anything else? And I said, well, actually, I've got this indentation. And so I was examined. And then the next thing, the word cancer was being mentioned. And we're going to put you to the city hospital in Derby. And I said, well, I'm in Bupa. So I ended up going to the park at the Burns dump very quickly. And I went with a friend of mine. And I met the consultant, had all the ultrasounds, the mammograms, the test. They said, you have got breast cancer, there and then. 53mm growth on the right side, a smaller one on the left side. It's travelling. It's gone to your lymph glands. I said, oh, my God. So the shock, the horror, what now? And, of course, it all happened very quickly. They had to get a programme together how they're going to treat me. So I was in the best care. I had 8 chemotherapies. It was 2 years exactly today. I had major life-saving surgery today, 2 years ago. And then I had 15 radiotherapies. And the radiotherapies aren't the normal ones. They're the ones called the breathing method, where you have to have your arms up high on this bed, hold your breath for 40 seconds, 8 times each day for 15 days, so that you're moving your organs, so that the radiation isn't zapping your heart and lungs. And luckily, because I'm a swimmer, I could hold my breath very easily. But I was being cooked with all the radiation. It was pretty horrific. And the last day of my treatment with the radiation was March 2015, it was March the 10th. I really had enough by now. And a lady came to see me. She was from Greece, all dressed in black. And she says, Linda, I've come to see you. She says, now tell me, darling, she says, I've been thinking about you. She says like this, talking like this. She says, what's the matter? So I relayed the whole thing. Anyway, she said, do you believe in angels? I said, I do. And she went to her handbag and got this card of Archangel Michael. She says, take this with you. So I did. I was shocked. I spent my whole life in shock all the time with all these things happening. And in the radiation room, there are no members of staff with you. And I couldn't see anything. I had these goggles on to monitor my breathing, to hold my breath 8 times, 40 seconds each time. And I swear, there was somebody standing at the side of me. I know there was. And do you know, I started to feel better. I wouldn't acknowledge I was ill at all. I went out and bought 3 wigs. I swam every day. They said, you can't swim. I says, watch me. You'll get an infection. I never did. You can't work. I says, watch me. And I pretended it wasn't happening. I completely detached. And I said to my friends, don't you dare say I'm ill. Do I look ill? Do I act ill? No, I'm not ill. I'm fine. I am dealing with the situation, I said. And that's how I dealt with it. And I came here, as you know, and never once missed one show, because I would not let people down. I don't let people down. And I had the most marvellous help at that hospital. And I can remember saying to the chemotherapy doctor one time, if I hadn't have come with that cough, how long would I have had? And she looked at my notes and she said, 12 months. And you know what? I changed my whole life. Everything changed. I got rid of everything that wasn't serving me or benefiting. I sorted my life out. I've never been so well as I am now. You've got to be positive. If you give in to it, you're finished.
In a way, now, is easier said than done. Oh, at the time,
it was,
being positive can't have been easy.
You've got to dig deep into those wells of reserves, because you find who your friends are. And the staff at the hospital said, you'll find out who your friends are. And you know, it was true. There are people I don't see anymore, because they've gone. And I've got new friends, and I've got my real friends, the people who stood by me. And it's changed my whole outlook. And one thing I do know, you've got to look after yourself. You've got to eat properly. You've got to rest. Don't go on these starvation diets. Look after your body. Give your body the best food you can. And you got to love yourself. And by loving yourself, you can have it all.
I want to sort of come to the conclusion of the story and a happy ending, I suppose, really, we can say, Linda, because you had breast cancer and you survived and you came through it. And you used the normal medical procedures. It's not like you went off and said, I shun all of this modern science.
No. I did as I was told.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to be positive, but I had my lows as well. Let's be honest, you can't be up there all the time. I struggled with it, and it was frightening, because it's so invasive, the treatment. It's terrible.
How best could people help you? If you think back to then, what were the things that really made a positive difference to you? Was it somebody dropping around for a cup of tea and a natter about nothing?
Just be kind. Just be understanding.
Because I think people are often scared of people with cancer because they don't want to go around and end up spending an hour talking about something terrible.
It's not catching. It isn't like having a flu virus. You need support. You know, you need help. I remember saying to my surgeon, why have I been given this? What must I do with it? Who can I help? I straight away thought, right, I'm going to use this to help other people, which I'm doing now as much as I can. I remember saying to him, thank you for saving my life. And he said to me, he says, I didn't save your life. He says, God saved your life. He says, you've got work to do. Shock. And do you know, people have been kind, and I know when people are ill, they need a lot of understanding. They need somebody to talk to. I've got broad shoulders. I can listen for hours. I'm a good listener. And sometimes we don't know all the answers, but we can listen. But you need your friends. You need love. And you need people to be there, even when you're feeling pretty rough. Because the next day you might not be so bad. But the effect of the drugs that it has on you is pretty shocking. It affects your emotions very badly, very badly.
You are famously the owner of the Psychic Poodles. And I feel as though we should sort of end the story with a little talk of the poodles. Who offered you support and somebody to be there for during these difficult
little
years?
Little Tallulah and Hilda, the Psychic Poodles.
You got them when they were how old?
They were 10 weeks old.
And they are now...
7.
So they have been with you through all of this.
All of this. And I say to my friends, when I look at these dogs, I don't see dogs, I see little people. And I've never told them they're dogs. They haven't got a clue they're dogs. And we all look the same. We've got the same colour hair. And look at me, and I think they see Mummy Poodle. And so they're almost human. I know they're dogs. And I'm sure people might say, oh, she's crazy, they're only dogs. They're not only dogs. They're souls occupying a poodle's body. And they are working dogs, and they sit in my workroom. And Hilda, she knows when people are ill. She fusses them, and I say to people, go and see your doctor. Look after your health. Get yourself checked out. And she's been right on every occasion.
Wow.
And she sniffed my cancer. She sniffed it.
This is something that people are talking seriously Hilda about,
knew,
aren't they?
Yeah. Looking back now, I can see. Yeah. I can see her behaviour. And Tallulah's into Hearts and Flowers, Relationships, Valentine's Day, Strictly Come Dancing, Sequins. Tallulah's Tallulah.
Who named them? Did you?
I did. Don't ask me where the names came from. I don't know.
Really?
Tallulah and Hilda.
They're very disparate names.
So, yeah, because Hilda's like a school dinner lady.
Yeah.
And she waddles about like one.
All right.
And she's the receptionist. And Tallulah was Tallulah. She just doesn't care. She likes music, television. She's a bit of a showgirl.
Mm. They perhaps represent the two sides of all of us.
I think so. They're twin sisters, but totally opposite and
the
yet the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, yin and yang and yet the same and yet opposite. I mean, anybody who'd have Tallulah, a non-dog owner, they'd never have another dog again after having her.
High maintenance.
Do you know, every night, I said to my friend, every night, I think they're settled, she's out at that back door shouting, screeching for a good hour. And I have to let her out to come back in again. And then she settles down. She's very defiant. She's very rebellious.
Don't ever let your psychic poodles meet my greyhounds, particularly yes. Tallulah, because between Tallulah and my greyhounds, who do exactly the same thing,
yes.
they would work out the way of staying up all night, every night.
Party time.
Yes.
And Tallulah, she can run faster than the wind.
Yeah.
She can run. And Hilda will run a little bit, and then she stops. She gets fed up with that, and she just waits. But they're lovely company. They're wonderful doggies.